Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us for this very special presentation. I want to thank the organizers of Buckeye Girl State for making room for us in the agenda this year. And I want to thank the staff of the University of Mount Union for getting us set up here so nicely in Presser Recital Hall. We're here this morning to talk about the power of one. Now, what do we mean by that? We're talking about the very special power that we all have as individuals to affect change in the world. Now, as attendance participants at Buckeye Girl State, you're all aware of the power you have to make a difference. You're all to be commended for taking a week out of your summer to study the role that we all play in our government and the responsibility we have to make the world a better place. Buckeye Girl State has been teaching this power to young women in Ohio for more than 70 years. You all follow in the footsteps of women like Rosa Parks, who embodied the power of one. You follow in the footsteps of great women leaders throughout history who stepped up to take the lead, believing that one individual indeed can change the world. And we're going to meet four women like this morning. The four women justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. And they are Chief Justice Maureen O'Connor, Justice Evelyn Lundberg Stratton, Justice Judith Ann Lansinger, and Justice Yvette McGee Brown. Now, as the elected judiciary of Buckeye Girl State, you'll have this unique opportunity to talk with the four women who lead the judiciary in the state of Ohio. Before we get started, I do want to thank WBNS-TV in Columbus, Ohio, who produced the Power of One biographies that we're going to see here in just a few minutes. These biographies were first shown as part of a Rosa Parks Day celebration in 2011, and I'd like to thank the other organizers of that event because that event served as the inspiration for this event today. So in seniority order this morning, we have Chief Justice Maureen O'Connor, the first woman to serve in that position in the state of Ohio. Let's learn a little bit more about her.
There I am with my first tricycle and my watering can.
She carried that love for cycling and gardening into adulthood on her way to becoming the first female Chief Justice of the Ohio Supreme Court.
Well, I'm the second oldest of a family of eight children. And there are six girls and two boys. And my dad was a dentist and my mother was a homemaker.
Raised in Strongsville in Parma, Chief Justice Maureen O'Connor went to Catholic schools growing up. After graduating from Seton Hill College in Greensburg, Pennsylvania, she thought about going for a master's in teaching, but decided it wasn't a fit for her.
And I always tell students when I'm speaking to them, it's not so much important to identify what you want to do, it's equally as important to identify what you don't want to do, and you figure out what you don't want to do by trying things.
She found herself attracted to law school and the study of political science, history, current events, concepts about fairness. Knowledge she'd use during her ascent from private practice to Summit County Magistrate, Common Pleas Court Judge, and Prosecuting Attorney. She spent 4 years as Lieutenant Governor in the Taft administration before winning election to an open seat on the state's high court and ultimately the position of Chief Justice. It's been a journey in which Chief Justice O'Connor finds kinship with others who've experienced the power of one.
Sometimes the average citizen that is like Rosa Parks, just one individual, happens to be in the right place at the right time and to take advantage of that opportunity and to make a statement and have that statement resonate.
She's the 10th Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Please welcome the Honorable Maureen O'Connor. And next, we have a justice whose life took a little different path. She was born to missionary parents in Thailand and was raised in South Vietnam and Malaysia. Let's learn a little bit more about her.
Hers would be the road less traveled to the High Court of Ohio. A journey that began on a dirt road in Southeast Asia, just as Evelyn Lundberg Stratton was born to missionary parents in Thailand.
These are some shots from the boarding school in South Vietnam.
Would spend most of her childhood in that boarding school.
I didn't have much in material goods growing up, but I had a mom that and a dad that made me believe that I should and could do great things.
So alone at 18, she came to America armed with little money, but rich in ambition.
I still have this real religious streak, and so I felt that that was my calling, and so ever since I went to law school, I wanted to be a judge.
She would earn her law degree at Ohio State, and at just 34, become not only the youngest, but the first female judge elected to Franklin County Common Pleas Court, where she earned the moniker Velvet Hammer.
They nicknamed me that because they told me that I give these very tough sentences, but I'm very kind and gracious.
Justice Stratton's success on the bench led to an appointment to the Ohio Supreme Court, where she hopes to affect change in the way the criminal justice system treats those battling mental health issues.
I would want it to be the work that I've done, trying to make a difference for people who have mental illness who come in the criminal justice system, and trying to change the jails and prisons from being de facto mental health hospitals to preventing them from coming into the system in the first place.
Let's welcome the Honorable Evelyn Lundberg Stratton. When Judith Ann Lansinger was elected the 150th Justice of the Supreme Court of Ohio, she became the first person in state history elected to all four levels of the state judiciary. Let's learn a little bit more about her.
That's a little Polish kid from Toledo.
She grew up in a working-class neighborhood of Toledo, granddaughter of coal miners, daughter of a carpenter. Justice Judith Lansinger attended parochial schools, but left in the eighth grade for a higher calling.
From the time I was 14 until the time I was 19, I was in the convent, and I actually became a novice and also taught school because I was going to college as I was in the convent.
She left the convent for the University of Toledo, where she became the first in her family to graduate, a degree in education and English. She married at 21, became a mom, and began to teach.
People always say, well, how did you get to go to law school? And I say it was because of a cocktail party.
A chance conversation with a recent law school grad prompted her to attend. She graduated as the valedictorian of her class. After a corporate law job, Justice Lansinger was elected to municipal judge, then trial judge, then court of appeals. She is now serving her second term on the state's top court. Justice Lansinger believes in the power of one times seven, as she and the other justices pool their individual strengths in a way that gives the Ohio Supreme Court a unified voice.
We listen to cases, we deliberate, we appreciate what each one has to say, and then if all goes well, we're able to function as an entity and make a decision that everyone in the state of Ohio will understand and will abide by.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Honorable Judith Ann Lansinger. And finally this morning, we have Justice Yvette McGee Brown.
As a young girl, she never imagined going from pigtails to a powerful position on Ohio's top court.
No, girl, when I was growing up, I didn't know what a justice was. But I can tell you that my career has taken me places I never even knew existed.
Justice Yvette McGee Brown's journey from Columbus's Brittany Hills neighborhood to all of those places may exemplify the power of one piece of advice.
I really give a lot of credit for being in this place to my guidance counselor at Mifflin High School, who looked at me one day and said, "You're too smart not to go to college."
A journalism degree from Ohio University and a law degree from the Ohio State University Moritz College of Law laid the foundation for a career that started in the Columbus City Prosecutor's Office. From there, it was the state of Ohio, working for the Attorney General, the Departments of Corrections and Youth Services, before being elected to the Franklin County Court of Common Pleas, where she served for 9 years. Then she got a call from Nationwide Children's Hospital.
They said, "We want to build a one-stop child abuse center." And they gave me a $3 million budget, which I quickly exploded to $10 million. But they allowed me to plan it from the ground up. Who gets that opportunity?
There would be at least one more to run for the office of lieutenant governor and to prove the power of one can impact many.
I think the power of one is about each of us accepting that we have a role to play, and you do it one person at a time.
Please join me in welcoming the first African-American woman to serve as Supreme Court Justice, the Honorable Yvette McGee Brown. Justices, it is a great honor to welcome you here this morning. Thank you so much for joining us. Let's see, we started in seniority order when we did our introductions. So if it's all right with you, Chief, we'll start our discussion in reverse seniority order.
Line with me, Gina.
Okay, great. So Justice McGee Brown, that means you're on the hook. What do you think are the lessons for the women of Buckeye Girl State for the power of one?
Well, I think you've got to always believe in yourself. I'm a big believer in making sure that you're prepared for every task. When you walk into the room, make sure you know what you're talking about, you've done your homework, and believe in yourself. Sometimes we hear this voice in here telling us that we may not be as good as the next person sitting at the table. Don't you believe it? You are competent, you are strong, and you have to believe that in every circumstance. You go in with confidence, and you just work harder than anybody else.
Okay, thank you. Justice Lansinger?
I would echo everything that Justice McGee Brown said, and I think that the four T's that an individual has can increase the power that you have, and that would be your talent, understanding what your talent is, then being trained for developing that talent to the best that you can, tenacity, not being afraid to deal with things that come, adversity that comes before you, and finally timing, being aware of opportunities and taking advantage of them. If you're able to develop these things and work with others, there's no place that an individual can't reach.
Justice Stratton?
I would add to those comments two other thoughts. One is to always create options for yourself. All of us took paths to this bench that were not exactly what we expected, perhaps, or the direction we started out in, but we always kept our options open, and when an opportunity came, we were ready for that opportunity because we were prepared with that option. But particularly in this day and age, I would exercise caution because you're at the age where it's very easy to make that one little mistake, that Facebook post that now is on forever and ever, that you can never erase, that little thoughtless comment that gets posted, drive drunk that you think you're okay, and that can affect you the rest of your life if that's on your record. So be very careful because you do not want to destroy those opportunities you have by doing something just thoughtlessly and carelessly in that rash moment. So I would also say you should exercise caution.
Well, I agree with everything that my colleagues have said, and I also would like to commend you on your devotion and your dedication to be here and learn more about government, and I think that is a huge step in fashioning how you will act in the future and what your future will be. You're obviously interested. You have set yourself apart by devoting the time to be here. That tells me an awful lot. It tells me that you're probably more in tune with what is happening in your community, in your school, and in your state, and in your nation, and maybe politics and government in general. So develop that interest, because God knows that those institutions can use strong, intelligent, graceful, women, and I can encourage each and every one of you to go forth with that. And I also want to emphasize something that we've all been involved with and found to be extremely rewarding, and that's public service. Use your talents, maybe not 100% if you have a job that is not in the public sector, if it's in the private sector, but still pay attention to doing good and volunteering and reaching out to the public sector so that you can be a force for change and a force for good. And some of you may even find positions, jobs in the public sector as well as we all have, and you'll realize what an absolutely rewarding career choice that is.
All right, thank you. Now we're going to open up the program to your questions. If you have a question for the justices, all of them or one in particular, we're asking you to please step into the center aisle that you're closest to, and our question moderators, Jenna Gant and Kelly McLaughlin, will direct you to the microphone we have set up. And as you step up to the mic, we'll ask you to introduce yourselves and let us know what school you're from, and then go ahead and ask your question. Okay. Any takers?
Good. All right.
Wow, that's great.
There's leadership.
don't stampede each other.
Hi, my name is Emily Reed. I'm from Bexley High School, and I was wondering if you always knew that you wanted to be a justice.
Excellent question. She wants to know if we always knew that we wanted to be a justice on the Supreme Court. I'll start by saying absolutely not. Right. I can tell you that one of the things that I've discovered, and I tell people all the time, especially people of your age and in your position, it's equally as important to find out what you don't want to do as to what you want to do. And so try on things for size, what interests you, and that interest may not be sustained. And then you can move on, eliminate that from maybe your career choice. But it's also, I think, extremely important that you realize that be flexible in your career planning. The ability to become a justice, and I'm not going to go into my entire career of opportunities that have been presented to me that I've been able to take advantage of, but that is the message. Yes. Be prepared, work hard, always excel in what you do, and opportunities will present themselves. The doors will be opened, and you can take advantage of that as well. And you know, being a justice on the Supreme Court, let alone Chief Justice, a judge, that was never in my mind, even when I graduated from law school.
Thank you.
I would say, because there's so many questions, we just take one.
Yeah, we'll have you take the next one.
Yeah.
How's that?
Because
there's so many.
Hi, my name is Marcelina Hernandez. I'm from Liberty High School. And I was wondering, when you first started going into law, who was your role model? And are there still any role models you have now?
I can tell my role model when I first decided to be a lawyer was a man named Judge Robert Duncan, who actually was the first African-American ever to serve on the Supreme Court of Ohio. He was appointed in 1969, and then he became a federal judge. And when I was 17, I called him to talk to him about the Columbus desegregation case for my senior thesis. And he didn't know me from Adam. And this man, who was a federal judge with all of that power, gave me an hour of his time to talk to an uninformed 17-year-old about why he was ordering busing in the city of Columbus. And once I decided I was going to be a judge, I said, I want to be that kind of judge who's always accessible, who makes themselves available for young people.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Jackie Vauquer. I'm from Padua Franciscan High School. My question was for you, as you know, strong and successful women in a high up government position, how do you deal with being a leader and not pushing things and just being very inspirational to people and things like that? Because you know, you're an inspiration for me. How do you go about, you know, that's activating yours. That and stuff in the community?
I found, I was one of the first women ever to try cases in my county on the civil side. First woman judge and first in my law firms. And so you really have to be careful how you deal in a man's world when you start off. I just believed in being myself, not trying to be a pseudo man or act like a man, try to take advantage of the strengths that I had in personality, and never to have a chip on my shoulder. I wanted to always feel like I earned my position, not I was the token for any reason. So I was always made sure that I volunteered and worked my way up the ranks of whatever I was trying to achieve. I tried never to take offense at comments that others might say were discriminatory or offensive. I tried to joke and laugh them off and tried to just take a very positive attitude, because I found people respond very positively back to you if you treat them that way. So I just tried to always take a very upbeat, positive attitude and always just show that I could do a better job than a guy could.
Thank you so much.
Hello, my name is Jalen LeCant, and I attend East Community Learning Center. And my question is, would you have taken the opportunity to attend Buckeye Girls State? And if you did, do you think it would change your career path?
Taken the opportunity to attend?
Buckeye Girls State.
Oh, absolutely. And I think the wonderful thing that you're all doing is getting the energy from each other. That's so very important. I would say that many of us have had experience of being in schools where they were single-sex schools. All of the high school that I attended, you saw I was in the convent. So I say I had a medieval adolescence. When I was in the convent, it was strictly women and girls. And you get a very uplifting, positive response from your colleagues and from the people that you're with. And you realize you don't need to rely on anyone else. You don't have to be the one sitting in back and having somebody else answer the questions, or being in charge of the newspaper, or taking on extra responsibility. You realize that you have the power within you. And so the Buckeye Girls Institute is something that I would have definitely taken part of if I hadn't been locked away in the convent.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Hello, my name is Megan Lance, and I go to Loudonville High School, and I was wondering if you ever think that Roe versus Wade will be overturned?
The question is whether Roe versus Wade will ever be overturned. That's a really interesting question, and that would be one for the United States Supreme Court. And here's a kind of an interesting little nuance about judges and justices, and we are forbidden from taking a position on cases and kind of prospectively opining on what we think should happen or will happen, because it would signal that we would not be impartial or unbiased. So that's a perfect example of a type of question that we can't and shouldn't answer.
Okay, thank you.
But thanks for asking it.
I'm Jenny Yost. I'm from North Ridgeville High School. You were talking about being impartial and nonpartisan. Have you ever had a case where you found it difficult to remain impartial and keep your opinions and morals out of your decision?
Well, I think that we all could answer yes positively to that. One of the hardest things to do is to be asked by an appellant or an appellee to support and rationalize the application of a statute that we personally might find distasteful or ill-advised or policy-driven, in a policy that we do not abide by personally. So what do you do in those situations? You put your personal opinions on the back shelf and your personal feelings, and you have to just parse the words of the statute and find meaning to those words and apply them to the case that comes before you. And it is a difficult thing to do, oftentimes. But there's over 700 judges in the state of Ohio, and we cannot have 700 personalities and personal opinions entering into how the members of the judiciary in the state of Ohio do their job. And so that's an oath that we take.
Bad laws can still be constitutional, and that's something that a lot of people don't realize. We have to look at the Constitution, and the General Assembly must act within the box of the Constitution. They might be doing things that we wouldn't agree with, but if the issue is this constitutional or not, And if it is within the parameters, even though we might not like the law, we might think it's a bad law, we still must follow our oath and declare it constitutional.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Heather Linger, and I attend Lakota West High School. My question is, what is the most rewarding aspect of being an Ohio Supreme Court Justice?
Actually, I love the job itself, and I have been very privileged to be in this job for 16 years. But sometimes the job also gives you ability to do some public service things that you wouldn't have the ability to do without the title and the ability to bring people together. And I have found for myself one of the most rewarding things is the ability to work on issues of mental health. And right now I'm working on a lot of issues with veterans who are coming back. People who end up in the criminal justice system because of their illnesses or their injuries, and they shouldn't be there. And so I feel very privileged that the job has given me the ability to work on things like that.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Isabella Sparhawk, and I go to St. Vincent St. Mary's High School. I was wondering if you find it difficult to balance such a prestigious job with family life.
Oh, yes. I have three children, and my youngest is 15. It does get to be a challenge, and fortunately, you have to marry well, ladies. I'm married to a high school teacher, and he a lot of times takes more of the load with the kids. He has summers off and Christmas and spring break, so I rely on him a lot. But yeah, there is a balance, particularly when there are unkind things said about you in the media, when you're campaigning. You know, your kids bear the brunt of that. They don't understand it. So it is a constant balance to make sure that they always remember, I'm their mom. No matter what else they hear, I'm their mom.
Thank you.
My name is Sarah Dye, and I go to Taze Valley High School. I was wondering, what's the biggest piece of advice you can give to someone thinking about going into law school or even considering being a judge?
I would say there are several things that you can do right now as a high school student, and they're basic things that everybody that is in high school can really learn. That you are learning. And the first one would be to be able to read well. You think of the sense of being able to read. We read an enormous amount every single day to prepare for our jobs, and every lawyer needs to be able to do that. You also need to be able to listen well. If you're going to be arguing a case, or if you're going to be listening to a client as an attorney, you need to be able to hear and to listen. You also need to be able to think and to put everything together into a good, understandable argument or a good, understandable memo. And that leads to the other issue of being able to write. So I'm saying, you know, seeing, reading, thinking, listening, writing, and then everything that you're doing now, all of you in the row here, being able to speak, because a lawyer's stock in trade is really words. So if you are doing those things as a high school student, any one of you could go to the practice of law and be successful.
Thank you.
And I might add that, you know, a lot of people think that they need to major in you know, political science in order to go to law school or history. Well, I happen to major in history, but that's not necessary. There's plenty of other college majors that will serve your interest extremely well. Philosophy, as much writing and literature and reading and logic that you can take, or absolutely, believe it or not, mathematics is a great prep for the practice of law. So don't limit yourself and think, well, I really don't like political science, but someday I want to be a lawyer and I may want to be a judge, so I better take political science and be not necessary.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Erica Swart, and I'm from Trimble High School, very near Ohio University. And I have actually two questions. One is, what is the biggest obstacle you've had to overcome?
Take that.
The biggest obstacle to overcome, mm-hmm. to becoming a judge?
Like in your lifetime, and to get you where you are now.
Go ahead.
Well, I probably have a very different perspective on that because I was born in Thailand. My parents were American missionaries, and I went to a mission-run boarding school, but it was very isolated. We had very little contact with American culture or life. So my mom basically would try to teach me about American culture. Every holiday, she would put up pictures of pilgrims and teach us history. She had a picture dictionary to try to teach me the English language. And when I was 18, my parents did not have enough money to come back. They only were allowed to come back every 5 years for furlough. So they gave me $500 that they had saved on their little missionary salary and put me on a plane, and I came back to America alone. So I guess you could consider that a huge obstacle, coming back with no family and no money. But what I found here in America is this is an absolutely wonderful land of opportunity. There are ways to get an education. I got work studies, I got grants, I sold cosmetics, men's shirts, swept floors, typed transcripts. This is a land where you can make whatever you want to be happen, unlike the countries that I grew up in. And so I never thought of it as an obstacle, but it's really an opportunity.
And I think my biggest obstacle was just, I came from an inner city high school. My mother was a single parent, so I was always worried about when I got to OU, whether I could compete. You know, what did I have as good an education as the other students at the university? And so really for me, I turned that little voice of doubt into my motivating factor. So I just studied harder than I'd ever studied before. And then when I started to get grades that showed me, yeah, I can do this, then it became easier. But it was really getting out of my own head and believing that my education and preparedness was as good as everybody else's.
Thank you. Another one is, what do you recognize as leadership traits in others?
What are leadership traits in individuals?
That you recognize, yeah.
I think a leader has to be collaborative and inclusive. I don't think that you can be a leader and be a dictator. I think that's the opposite of what a leader should be. A leader has to make a case for the direction the leader wants to go in and be inclusive in trying to convince whomever needs to be led or is part of the group that this is the best path to take. And you can only do that by discussion, by being inclusive, having as many people at the table as are going to be affected by the decision, and giving everybody an opportunity to weigh in and respecting the opinion of other people, which is a difficult thing for some people to do, really, especially when they have it in their head that this is the way we want to go and this is the way we're going to do it and I don't care what you say. That's not a leader. That isn't. It's a leader builds a consensus and then people want to go in that direction, whether it's based on charisma or just a recognized intelligence or just a combination of all those things.
And the Chief Justice is talking about how she approaches her job. I just want you to know that. But there are two other things that she didn't mention, and that's the integrity of the person.
That's exactly right.
A leader is not going to be followed unless that person is worthy of being the leader. And so integrity is right up there, and it doesn't hurt to help. It doesn't hurt to have a sense of humor, and our chief does have that too, so I can attest to that.
And I just have to echo on the integrity, because right now you all are building relationships with each other. You're going through a simulated political process. You will hopefully have friendships you develop here for a long time to come, but remember that leadership starts and ends with integrity, and your word has to stand for something. Practice that now. When you say you're going to do something, you follow through, and when you commit to someone, you have to keep your word. It's the most important aspect of leadership.
Thank you very much.
Good morning. My name is Rachel Rendesi, and I go to Jackson Milton High School in North Jackson, Ohio, obviously. My question is, what do you believe is the most pressing issue in the Ohio judicial system?
Good question.
I would say in these economic times, the shifting of funds is probably one of the things that's affecting our court system. And you will read articles from each part of the state where courts may be trying to deal with less money and also the possibility of more cases as well. So it's something that, you know, you hear about the economic results throughout the country. It affects the judiciary and the court system as well.
Sort of a corollary to that is the work that I do in trying to help persons who have mental health issues or drug and alcohol issues or the veterans returning. Our courts in Ohio have been very, very progressive on that. We have judges that operate what we call mental health courts, drug courts, drug and alcohol courts, but the lack of resources to treat, which is something the judiciary can't supply, but the administrative legislative side has to supply, is woefully lacking, and so you can't be very effective in dealing with somebody in a mental health court if you have no resources to treat them. And that's really true, particularly in your smaller counties, like where you would come from. And so we're doing everything we can to try to encourage the legislature, encourage more efficiencies, encourage telemedicine, anything we can do to get treatment out into the smaller communities, particularly so that we can break the cycle of going in and out of prison and jail.
Thank you very much.
Oh, I'd say one of the other challenges to any institution, whether it's the legislature, the executive, or certainly the judicial branch, is that many people think we're just a static organization or institution, and they don't realize that the judiciary and the laws and how we do our jobs has to evolve. You know, Justice Stratton mentioned the specialty dockets, which are mental health and drug and alcohol and other specialty topic type of courts. But there's an evolution. When society evolves, the courts have to keep up and they have to be able to address the problems that society brings to the courts. And sometimes that requires an institutional change. And one of the hardest things to do sometimes is convince the people who have been part of the judiciary and part of the groups that are part of the judicial institution, that we've got to change the way we're doing things. We have to change the order of business. We have to change our emphasis. How many times do you hear, well, we've always done it this way? And sometimes it's, well, that's a perfect, support for the reason why we need to change, because it's not being effective any longer, or we've got a new problem to deal with, and we have to be, because above all, we're public servants. We have to serve the public.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Hi, my name is Sarah Skinner, and I'm from Wellsville, Ohio. What was the one instance that jump-started each of your careers?
A cocktail party. It's absolutely true. I grew up in an area, I didn't know any lawyers, there were no lawyers in my family, I knew nothing about the law, and I absolutely thought that you had to have pre-law training the way people have pre-med training to be doctors. And I was at a party for a friend who had passed the bar exam and was invited everybody there, and I spoke with someone who said, you don't need to have pre-law training. There's no such thing. And I said, oh, sure. You mean just a degree in elementary education could get me into law school? And he said, yes. He said, do you like to read? And I said, yes, I like to read. And my husband's behind me saying, yeah, she likes to read. And then he said, well, then do you like to write? And I said, yes, I like to write. And my husband goes, oh, yeah, she likes to write. And then he said, and do you like to argue? And my husband's going like this. So that was in June, and I was in law school that September.
And for me, I was a journalism major. I went to Ohio University to be a journalist because I'd worked on my high school newspaper, and I wanted to go to D.C. and be like a press secretary for a congressperson. And it was my advisor in the journalism school who said, well, if you want to go to D.C., you need to go to law school. And I said, why? And she said, because everybody in Washington is a lawyer. It's 3 more years of your life, you'll be 25 years old. And so it sounded like a good plan.
I had gone through a couple majors and was trying to decide what to do, and I played the piano for a school quartet that traveled and sang to recruit students for the college. And my chaperone said, you like to write and you like to act. Why don't you become a lawyer? So that's, I thought about it and I thought, well, I really don't know what a lawyer does. I'd never seen one growing up in Thailand. We didn't have TV most of my life, so I never saw Perry Mason. But it seemed like a good solution to my current problem, so I decided to go to law school. But concurrent with that thought came the idea that I wanted to be a judge. I have this religious streak in me still, and I thought of it as my calling, so I went to law school knowing I wanted to be a judge from the moment I went.
Well, I kind of went to law school by chance, or happenstance, I should say. I graduated from college, and I worked for a bit, and then I decided that I wanted to get a master's in teaching, so I enrolled in a program at State University of New York and worked all the way up through student teaching, just shy of my thesis for a master's in teaching, and I said, what am I doing? I don't want to be a teacher. And so I realized that's, you know, I didn't have the patience really to be a teacher. And so I was, you know, waitressing at night and doing, you know, teaching during the day. And I decided I really, you know, I thought about going to law school when I was in grade school and then again at the end of college and kind of put it off. So I decided, okay, I'm at a crossroads in my life. I know what I don't want to do. And I've tried out a few different things. So here's what I'm going to do. I've got X amount of dollars saved up from these odd jobs, and I want to do two things because I love to travel. I'm either going to go to law school or I'm going to take my money and bum around Europe as long as my money lasts. And so I said I'm going to apply to one law school. If I get in, I guess I'll go to law school. And I applied and got in, and I went to law school, and I never got to bum around Europe.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Naomi Johnson, and I'm from Olentangy High School. And my question is, do you believe that being a woman allows you to have a better insight in your careers?
Oh yeah, we're smarter.
Next question.
That's right. I don't know about better insight, but I think as women, we bring some unique skills, you know? I think women tend to lead differently. But I can't say, you know, I can't make a blanket statement that women are better than men. I think we each have strengths and weaknesses, and every individual is different.
And, you know, it's great that we're in this panel, the four of us, and you can tell we have a very collegial group, but we have a very collegial relationship with the three men who are on the court, and we let them speak occasionally. But it's a good relationship. We respect their opinions and their work products as they do ours. And what I said earlier about being unbiased and not letting your personal opinions enter into how you do your jobs, that goes for, you know, a gender, your politics, your religion, or any other essence of you that you have to try and keep out of your decision-making process. Now, it's impossible to say who I am today is not fashioned by many of those things, but you would never want somebody to start out an opinion, as a woman, this is what I think on the bench. And so you have to put it in its place. And like I said, we're here today to emphasize that you, if we can do it, you can do it. You've learned more about us, you know what our stories are, and you can see, number one, we're ordinary people with, you know, ordinary talents and maybe a little extraordinary drive, and we happen to be in extraordinary positions, great jobs, but if we can do it, you can do it.
Thank you.
I'm Andrea Faree from Piqua High School, and my question is, what does justice mean to you?
Wow. I would say it means fundamental fairness, that everybody, regardless of who they are, where they come from, what their economic status is, that they are treated fairly before the law.
And that's exactly what's on the top of the U.S. Supreme Court, equal justice under law. So I would echo that as a perfect definition.
As long as we have access to that justice, and that's the hard part. oftentimes is getting before the court, and that is one of the huge issues that we work on in the judiciary, is to have people, to allow people to have access so that they can have the justice that they have within the confines of their case.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Julie Mann, and I'm from Evergreen High School in the Northwest. My question is, do you ever have another justice persuade you to change your opinion?
I've been there the longest, so I'll answer that, yes. And I like to think I've persuaded other justices to change their opinion. When we decide a case, the cases that come to us tend to be very gray. The black and white cases settle out at the Court of Appeals level or they don't get appealed. We get cases that have some very tough issues, real tough balancing acts between constitutional rights, responsibilities, protections. And sometimes I get on the bench and I really don't have a really good idea which way I'm going to go. And I listen to the oral arguments and I think I'm going one way, but I'm still not certain. And then when we go in the back room and all seven of us share our ideas and share our viewpoints and look at the law and analyze precedent, and it's like, oh, I didn't think of that point. That's a very, very good point. Or I try to bring my point out because I think I'm so right in my position and try to persuade somebody else. So there's a real give and take. Sometimes we argue very, very strongly for our positions. We feel very strong about them. But in the end, we cast our votes, we move on, we remain friends because that's the job that we're elected to do.
Thank you so much.
My name is Allison Triumfo. I'm from Dublin, Ohio. And I was wondering, what keeps you inspired and what keeps you going when the job gets difficult?
Well, I think that I have a little bit different perspective on it, having the administrative responsibilities as well as the, you know, judicial responsibilities. I just find the job intriguing. It is just, I haven't yet come to the point, and I've been on the court since January 2003, where I say, I can't do this another day, or it just is such a varied job. It's never the same twice. It's the different cases that we hear that are all, and I'm constantly learning. And that's the good part about a job, is when you're learning, I can read a brief and it's like, you know, I remember a little bit about that from law school, but now I'm going to learn more about that because it's being applied here in this case. And so you have to continuously learn about the subject matter of the cases that come before you, and that keeps everything fresh and interesting. The administrative things that I do, you know, running an institution like the Supreme Court, with all of the, you know, the responsibilities there, it's always something, you know, on the talking about it, meeting with someone, you know, having a decision to be made there. So the job for me hasn't gotten, you know, hasn't gotten old, and I've never had to kind of take a cattle prod and get me out of bed in the morning. It's always exciting.
For me, if I'm having a bad day, I go home and hug the grandkids. That's what keeps me moving.
She's such a softie.
I would echo what the chief said. I mean, I hope for each of you, you have a career that makes you excited to get out of bed in the morning. This job, it's so purposeful, and we're inspired because we know we're making a difference, and then we get to go out into the community. We get to do things like this with young people. And so I have loved every minute of this job, and I hope you get that opportunity. Each and every position I've held throughout my career has been one that's been exciting, and I get motivated by the chance to make a difference.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello. My name is Claudia Hall, and I attend Belpre High School. I was wondering if you had the chance to go back and do something over, would you?
Ooh, there's some guys I would not have dated.
I think we could all say that.
Oh, there might be little bits and pieces here and there, but generally when I look back on my career path and how I got where I am, I have no regrets whatsoever. I, like I said, I found America just to be so full of opportunities. I moved to Columbus. I found Columbus to be a wonderful town to a newcomer with no money and no family. I could run for office without any of that behind me. I just look at this as it's been a very, very privileged life, and I don't have any regrets.
I would say I would have learned another language. And as I mentioned, you know, the convent, we didn't study Spanish or French. We studied Latin. There aren't too many people speaking Latin these days. But I think that's something that could be very useful to any of you who are thinking of going into law, because we think of the clients and we think of individuals who are going to need representation down the road. If you have a second language, Spanish in particular, I think would be extremely helpful.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Destiny, and I was wondering if there's a specific case that has been most influential to you. Oh, and I go to Highland High School, by the way.
A specific case that have come to our court that has been most significant.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are plenty of cases that we've decided, and depending on your interest, what segment you are, either in the business community or the political community or in any other community, you can identify a case that, you know, you can either agree with or disagree with. You know, keep in mind, in most cases, there's going to be a winner and there's going to be someone who doesn't win. And so our cases are all viewed by the participants in those terms. By the lawyers, they're viewed as controlling and instructional. So each case we write is important. It's very important because it can guide courts in the future as to how they're going to rule on similar situations or cases that come before them. One of the cases that I always like to point to is Norwood versus Horney, which was a property rights case where, without going into detail, the little guy won. The homeowner won in the face of government and big business. And Ohio at the time was the first state to rule in that type of a case where the government was trying to take land from the little guy, so to speak, the property owner. And we, on the Supreme Court, unanimously, all seven justices said, no, you can't do that. And that was hailed across the country as a landmark decision in that particular area of the law. And I look at that case, and I take great pride in that case as a member of the court because it was such a notable decision, and that we were 7-0. We were united on it, and it was a historical case, and it's reported in the law books, and people cite it all the time, and I wrote it, so.
Thank you for your time.
I think this will have to be our last question. I'm sorry for the rest of you waiting in line.
Hi, my name is Jessica Eichenlob. I'm from Grafton, Ohio. I go to Midview High School. My question is, due to your positions in power and as politicians, when things that aren't necessarily true do come about you and the news and stuff, how do you deal with it and how do you get past it and try to overcome it?
Well, I'll answer the first question. I think that this job gives you a lot of ability to make change. I often joke that when I have a meeting and I ask people to come, everybody comes. Everybody returns my phone calls. And so when you work on projects, every one of us has different things that we work on that we care about outside of the job itself in terms of reforms. It gives you the ability to bring people together because they so respect the institution of the court and the role of the justice that you can bring people together and you can say to them, I want to work on this problem. I'm going to work on it with you, not just tell you what to do. And you bring all of them to the table and work together. So in that sense, it really does give you a great deal of power to make change and to use that for good.
Okay, thank you.
Anybody else have an answer?
Well, I was just going to say that I think you have to surround yourself with strong friends and mentors, and to always hold on to who you know you are. If you're going to enter public service, you have to have thick skin, because people are going to say untrue things about you. And the reality is, we live in a very a very instant world where anybody with a computer or a telephone can have an opinion. And so what you've always got to do is hold on to who you are, surround yourself with a supportive community and peers, and just roll off the things you know aren't true and keep doing what you think is best. If you have a hard time doing that, being an elective office is probably not going to be for you.
When you think about it, the news cycle is very fast. When you have bad press, and we've all been in that situation, it seems like your world's falling apart. Everybody's looking at you differently, or that's what you think. But in the overall scheme of things, it's like a pebble in the pond. The news story gets thrown out there, makes a lot of ripples, and then it sinks to the bottom, and then it's over and done with. So even though it may feel like the most important thing to you, it really isn't as important as you might think. And that's where having solid family and friends to be supportive is the best thing you can have.
One of the nice things about being a member of the judiciary, especially the Supreme Court, when we are criticized unjustly because of what we do as a court, the members of the bar in Ohio are obligated to stand up for the Supreme Court. That's one of your duties as a lawyer, is to not allow the court, not only the Supreme Court, but the local courts and the local judges, to be criticized unfairly and unjustly. And when that happens, you will notice sometimes in the letters to the editors that there are lawyers that weigh in and say, wait a second, that's not right. That's not the truth, and this is what the truth is. And to unfairly criticize a member of the judiciary or the court in general is wrong. It's bad for the institution. It paints the judiciary in a very negative way, and I think damages the institution. So that's one of the protections, I guess you can say, that members of the judiciary have. We can rely on members of the bar to step up and set the record straight.
Okay, thank you, Justices. This has been a great discussion, I think, very enlightening for our ladies of Buckeye Girl State. And I just want to thank our participants. I can tell by your poise and the quality of your questions that you have great things ahead of you. Again, I want to thank our organizers for making time for us today. This has been a great experience, I hope, for everyone involved. And again, the staff of the University of Mount Union for our great setup here this morning. I hope you've all enjoyed yourselves and learned a thing or two. I've enjoyed being here with the justices this morning, and we appreciate you having us. Thank you.